Today we're going to be discussing the Christian's influence on the job. And as it was pointed out to me just a minute ago, some of you gentlemen in here are fortunate enough that you are retired. So it isn't that this lesson doesn't apply to you, it's just that you can help us with the years of experience that you had while you were working, and you can help us understand better some of the things we're going to be talking about this morning. But the question, I want to start out with a question, and I want to end the lesson with the same question. That question is, do people at work know that you're a Christian? Do people at work know that you're a Christian? Let's start from the very beginning. Work is something that God invented for man. And when you go back and you look in the very first book in the Bible in Genesis, God put Adam to work right away. In Genesis 2 and 15 it says, "Then the Lord took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to tend and keep it." This is in the second chapter of Genesis before he has brought Eve into existence. So Adam is by himself, but God put Adam to work in the garden by tending to the garden that he had given to him. Now in the next chapter we look at, now Eve has been created from the rib of Adam, and she's tempted, and the two of them eat from the tree. And in Genesis 3 and 19, once again, we see that they're now going to be required to work again. But it seems as though I want you to compare these two phrases to see, they sound just a little bit different. Because in Genesis 3:19 it says, "In the sweat of your face you shall eat bread, till you return to the ground, for out of it you were taken, and dust you are, and dust you shall return." So, before the fall of man, God put Adam in the garden to tend it. Sounds nice, doesn't it? Tending the garden seems. And then in Genesis 3 and 19, we hear that you're going to work, and you're going to get the things that you need by what? By the sweat of your face, or King James, I think it's sweat of your brow. So you can see, contrast those two. One sounds very nice, so you're going to tend the garden. And the other one is, you're going to work really hard because of what you've done. And all of mankind will have to work. So it's always been a requirement for man to work. Let's think about Jesus for a minute. Jesus comes to earth. He's the Son of God. Was he exempted from working when he was here? And I'm not talking about the last 3 years of his life. I'm talking about before that. He didn't start his ministry until he was about 30 years old. So what profession was Jesus? He was a carpenter. Matter of fact, if we go into Mark 6 in verses 1 through 3, and actually in verse 3, some of the people are marveling that Jesus is doing some of the things that he's doing. And these people start saying, "Is this not that carpenter, the son of Mary, the brother of James and Joseph and Judas and Simon?" So they were surprised that, you know, they knew Jesus as a carpenter, but they saw him doing these other things, and they were very surprised. But Jesus labored as a carpenter. And if you go back during that time in Jewish tradition, fathers that had children had certain requirements that were laid upon them with regards to their children. They had certain responsibilities that they were supposed to take care of. The first one was, if a male child was born, he was to make sure that child was circumcised. Secondly, he had a responsibility to make sure that he taught all his children the law. And the third thing that he was required to do was teach them a trade. Why do you think Jesus ended up as a carpenter? Because his dad was a carpenter. And we don't know anything really about Joseph in terms of what profession his father was, or his father, or his grandfather, or as we go on back. But I think you'll find that a lot of folks, if you're a carpenter and you're required to teach a trade to your child, what's the most likely thing that you're going to teach them to be? A carpenter, because that's what you know. So Jewish fathers were required to teach their children a trade. I want you to stop and think for a minute now about going into the work environment. And unless you were blessed with some kind of large family trust, or you didn't have to work, most everybody in here has had the opportunity to work in some form or fashion, and you know what it's like to be in a work environment. What do you think are some of the things that a Christian should be considering when he wants to be a good influence on the job? What are some of the things that come to mind to you?
Honesty.
Okay, honesty.
Integrity.
Loyalty.
Okay, loyalty.
Punctuality.
Ooh. That's a good one. Okay, knowledge.
Controlling your tongue.
Dependability.
Being dependable. Okay.
Hard work.
Hard work. Okay.
What about priorities, too?
Okay, priorities.
Seeing what it's really like.
Okay. Okay, well, we're going to talk about some of the things that you just mentioned, and we're going to also talk about some of the things that weren't brought up. It was interesting when Bill Jr. gave me this outline for this lesson from the book that people have been teaching from, because there's a section, the second section, is things a Christian must practice to exert a good influence on the job, and there's 11 different topics here, and I don't believe that the author intended to put these necessarily in the order of what's most important or what you can build off of another thing. But for some reason, he put down at number 5, the Christian must possess a good knowledge of the Scriptures. Now, if I was putting this lesson outline together, I'd put that at the very beginning, because that's the foundation. That's the fundamental requirement that you have to have as a Christian, that you build your influence upon. So rather than discussing it as number 5, I'd really rather discuss it up front. When you think about this idea of the knowledge of the Scriptures, why is it important when you're going to go to work that you have a good understanding of Scripture?
So you can be ready to give an answer.
Okay. Good. What else?
So you know what to do. So you know how to be a Christian.
Okay.
Okay.
Is being a Christian, is it like Sunday morning, I get up, I put on my nice clothes, I put on my little Christian garb, so to speak, and I come to church on Sunday morning, and I'm a Christian, and I act like a Christian, and then when I go home, I take all that off? Is a Christian something that you sort of put on and take off, or is it something that you are all the time? Okay, 24 hours. Being a Christian is a 24-hour a day, 7-day a week, 365 and one quarter days a year. It's something that you are, not something that you do. You either are one or you aren't one. And we're going to touch on some of the points when you do act that way, where you are a Christian at times and you don't like act like one at other times. We're going to talk about that a little bit later on. So in order to make sure that when we go to work that we know the Scriptures, we have to follow some of the directions in the Bible. The first one is what? 2 Timothy 3:16. Everybody knows that one. Study to show thyself approved unto God, a workman that needeth not be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. Or the New King James is that the man of God may be complete, thoroughly equipped to every good work. We have to have, if we don't have the Scriptures, how many of you, when you go to work, have a Bible at your desk at work? Or at least take one with you? Dan's raising his hand. What a surprise. Dan's got one. That's good. That's good. When I go to work, I have this little skinny one here. It doesn't have the Old Testament in it, but it has the New Testament in it. It's nice and small, and it fits in my my briefcase, and I always have it. Because unlike Dan, I haven't memorized the entire thing. So I kind of have to refer to it from time to time. So we need, we need to be knowledgeable in the Scriptures, but we also, if you go to work, why not have one of these either in your desk or take one with you when you go? It's a good reason to get in trouble, I'd say. If I go to work and somebody gives me a hard time about having a Bible, you can go right ahead and fire me if you want to, because if I can't have it there, then I don't need to be there either. And that's the kind of attitude I think you need to have. I think it's already been mentioned, but 1 Peter 3 and 15, we're told to always be ready to give a defense. You never know when you're going to need those words. You never know from day to day what's going to go on, what opportunities. Sometimes you need to know the words so that you know how to comport yourself, how you need to conduct yourself in certain situations. Other times, there are opportunities to come along to teach other people and to show other people. So when those opportunities arise, we need to be ready and prepared to do that. Okay, I think one of the topics, I forget who brought it up, was this idea of being honest. Why is it important to be honest? It shows trustworthiness. Can you imagine having a relationship with another person or a group of people and you can't trust them? Can you imagine trying to work someplace where, one day I'm a good guy and you can trust me, but then the next day you're not so sure that, what I'm doing is the right thing?
The worst thing, Mike, is the boss being dishonest.
Okay. I'll tell you a little story that I had. I went to work for a nonprofit organization, and I took over a large group of people. And everybody here, when you get a new boss that you don't know, and you're kind of like, what's this person like? What can I say? What can't I say? What's he going to expect? What's he not going to expect? And the flip flop is true of that too. If you're the new person coming in to lead and manage a group of people and you don't know them, there's this issue of not knowing those people. So I scratched my head for a long time because I had had small groups of people work for me, but I didn't have this many people work for me all at one time. So I took them all in a room and I talked to them about a couple of things. I said, there's one hard and fast rule that holds no matter what, and it, I will promise you that I will never, ever, ever lie to you. And you're going to promise me that you're never, ever, ever going to lie to me. Because when you do, or if I do, that kills trust. Dan.
In Birmingham, we had a young man. He was telling me about, I will lie for you, I will lie to you, and I know you don't want a liar working
you out. Yep. Anybody else been in a situation where your boss wanted you to lie in a certain situation? That comes up every now and then. It's tough. It's not tough to do the right thing, as long as you have the right motive. But it's sometimes, it's difficult to, when your boss tells you to do something and you tell him, I can't do that. I'm not going to do that, and here's the reason why. Okay, well, we know in James chapter 5, in verse 12, it talks about, this is a fairly controversial verse for some folks, where it talks about not swearing an oath. But at the end of that verse it says, but let your yes be yes and your no be no. I think in King James it's let your yeas be yea and your nays be nay. When you go to court, if you've ever had to go to court before and had to testify, the bailiff walks over with a Bible and you place your hand on it and they ask you to swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God. And you hold your hand up and with your hand on the Bible and you swear that you're going to tell the truth.
Do they still use the Bible?
Some places they do. I don't know about here if they do or not. I haven't been to court lately, so I don't know. Okay. It's unfortunate that that is believed to be a necessity before you start to talk. I mean, the assumption, if you think about it long enough, is that, well, you're going to stand up here and lie, so we're going to have, make sure that you stand up in front of everybody and tell them you're going to tell the truth. And that's an unfortunate thing.
The problem with going to court and with
Dan.
The interesting thing is, how do you know the man is not lying when he said he would tell the truth, so he's still not under a lie?
That's true. That's a good thing. When we think about honesty for a little bit and we think about work, what about there's that old idea, an honest day's work for an honest day's pay?
Is that, man told me that no such thing as a free lunch.
No such thing as a free lunch. I haven't gotten a free lunch. It didn't have, you know, well, people take you out to lunch, but generally it's because they want you to do something, buy something of theirs. There's usually a catch to it. In Ephesians 6 and verse 5 and in Colossians 3 and 22, they're almost parallel kinds of discussions here, but in verse 6 of Ephesians 6, it says that we shouldn't do things to, says, not with eye service as man pleasers. We shouldn't be doing things, you know, it's like when your boss isn't looking, you're goofing off and you're not doing what you're supposed to do. When the boss comes by, all of a sudden you're sitting at your desk and you're looking busy and you're doing all the right things. Is that what we're looking for? Is that how we should be comporting ourselves?
Jesus is looking.
Well, I know, absolutely. That's always been the funny thing when you think about when you're a little kid and you do something and you're looking around to see if anybody sees you doing it. There's always somebody that sees what you're doing, even if you can't see them. You know, God can see you.
At the company where I work, it was working when he walked in, and everybody stayed really late until he left. The boss is going to be here. You know, change of work attitude.
Absolutely. Sometimes there's a temptation, you know, when you don't do an honest day's work for an honest day's pay, what really are you doing? Stealing. And we're that's obviously something that we're told that we're not supposed to do as Christians. There's a lot of different places you can look. In Titus 2 and 9, it talks about not pilfering. And in Ephesians 4:28, it says, let him who stole steal no longer, but rather let him work. Or let him labor working with his hands. God wants us to earn the things that we have. And the way we get those things is by working.
Mike, there's nothing so satisfying as at the end of the week, getting that check and looking at the boss right in the eye and saying, I earned every dime. Nothing.
Absolutely. How about this idea of when you're at work and you want to have a good influence as a Christian, well, what about being fair and just and considerate? That sound came.
I work for General Motors, Mike. It's really different for different workplaces.
Anybody else had that experience before where they know that you're reliable, dependable, and
best way to deal with that situation is to remember who you work for.
Mm-hmm. That's
I have to admit that is easy to say, but you live that day in and day out, and when
it's not easy, but you got to do it.
So you need to pull off. I did do that, but it is tough, and that's why I feel inside that a lot of Christians don't want people to know that they're Christians in the workplace because they know they're going to be taken advantage of. And it's a hard thing.
Try working at a place where they think they're Christians.
Well, they know the difference. They know the difference.
There was an article in the November 2004, Gospel Advocate on business success is not measured by what you acquire, but in how business success. You think I would be able to read this well? And I'll tell you why in a minute. Business success is not measured in what you acquire, but in how you manage the journey. This is an article that was written by me. So there's this whole article, you know, that was just brought up, this idea of who are you really working for? And that's what this article is about. It's about how to be successful in business when you change your attitude about who your partner is. You know, your partner is God, and that's who you work for. And that's what this article is about. And if you didn't get a chance to read it, I'd be happy to give you a Xerox copy of it. Pardon?
What is it?
Gospel Advocate. From 2004, November of 2004. It's a long time ago. Back when I could write well.
Bring up the concept of fair. That makes me think that if he pays us someone else the same amount, that he pays us for working longer, that's fair.
Just some general ideas. So, you know, we need to make sure when we're at work that we're shouldering our responsibility, that, you know, everybody wants to be at the front of the line when a job is done well and the boss is there and he's handing out the praise or the bonus or the whatever. But as Christians, we also need to understand that sometimes we're going to mess up at work. And when it's time to hand out the blame, it's not the time to go hide, you know, someplace and let somebody else take the blame for something that you were a part of. So you can't stand in the front of the line for the adulation and not stand in the front of the line when the blame gets handed out, as long as it's your blame to receive. We don't want to take advantage of other people, and this one in particular I think is important for a Christian to keep in mind. It's you need to be careful when you're busily climbing that ladder of success at work, because all of the little folks that you step on the way up are the same people you're going to see on the way down. So you need... here's another one that's kind of interesting. And as Christians, do we have should we be happy? Why should we be happy? Okay. Okay. Well, Jesus has overcome the world, and all the problems that are here, if we work with him, we can overcome the problems that we have in life. And we know that when this life is over, this isn't the have-all and the end-all. The world kind of runs on that idea of success being whoever dies with the most toys wins. Well, we as Christians know that that's not true, because I personally have never seen a hearse with a U-Haul trailer. You're not taking it with you. It's all staying here. So whatever you acquire here stays here. So we need to keep our eye on the mark, which is heaven, which is eternal life with God. So as you start to climb that ladder, you know, you need to be careful what you do and how you do those things, because that involves other people's lives, and we want to make sure that we can be happy about what we're doing. How about being loyal to our convictions? This one is closely associated with one at the end of the lesson, and maybe we should just talk about both of them at the same time. When we think about having convictions, in 1 Corinthians 16, verse 13, it says, "Watch, stand fast in the faith, be brave, be strong." It's all good, common sense, Christian attitude to have. I want you to picture for yourself, I'm using this specific individual because I think he kind of epitomizes what goes on in the world of business today to a large degree. I want you to think about Pontius Pilate for a minute. Here's Pontius, and he's the ruler of a small region where Jerusalem is and the surrounding area. And How would you say he operates as a leader? He's passing the buck. You know, when Jesus came before him, one of the first things that he did was he tried to pass the buck to Herod. You know, he's looking at Jesus and doesn't really think there's anything wrong with him, but he doesn't want the Jews to be upset, so he says, I'll send him over to Herod. Herod does what? Sends him back to Pontius Pilate. Then he tries, you know, a couple other maneuvers to try and get out of trying to make a decision. You know, the bottom line is he typifies today what a lot of people refer to as he was trying to be politically correct. You know, he didn't want the Jews to be offended, but he knew that Jesus hadn't done anything. But in the end, what did he do? He compromised what he knew was right so the people would like him. And we don't want to, as Christians, we don't want to be like that. You know, whether it's in business or any other part of your life, we don't want to compromise our convictions of what we know to be correct. And when we're at work, there's an whole variety of things that go on there that the Christians can be tempted to get involved in. And some of them are big things and some of them are small things. Business practices, how you conduct yourself and how the business gets actually run, can be a fair process or it can be a manipulative process. I keep thinking about that, you know, that TV commercial that they have on now where they have the three guys, the three trainees for the cell phone company, and they're sitting up front, and the guy's talking about the thing to do is you got to get them into the family plan. And the guy raises his hand and goes, yeah, the family plan seems good. And the guy goes, yeah, seems good, doesn't it? But, you know, that's the best way we can manipulate those people into using more minutes, and then they have to pay more money for it. And he goes, well, that's not right. And then they have the bouncer in the back come up to beat up the guy for bringing up the fact that it's not a sound business practice. Those are some of the things that we need to avoid. There's other things that go on at work, like around Super Bowl time, what happens? The pool. The piece of paper comes around and it's got everybody's name, and they included your name on there. You know, who do you pick, and you know, how much money you want to chip in? As a Christian, what you should do with that?
Scratch your name off.
Scratch your name off. Ray?
Another thing they're doing that on fishing boats now, is ever who catches the fish, biggest fish.
Yeah.
Catch the biggest fish, you win the fight.
Okay.
I don't do it.
Then there's, you know, there's events that go on with business. A lot of times, depending on the kind of job you have, sometimes you have to go out to lunch or dinner with somebody to entertain a client or a customer, and you go off and you go to lunch and everybody wants to order something to drink, and some people are ordering drinks that have alcohol in them. What are you going to do? That's right. If you can go first, it's good.
You know, when I was commercial fishing and working out on the merchant marine boats, all I had noticed that all these little things stand out huge.
Absolutely.
It's really big.
I'll give you a little. This is what I used to do. It seemed to work. You know, you go to some of these things where they're the mix and mingle kind of thing at the end of the day where it's an event that your company is sponsoring, so you have to be there, and everybody's walking around with a drink in their hand and they're talking. What's the best thing to do in that situation?
Go to the bar or 7-Up. It fizzles, and everyone assumes you're going to leave.
Well, that's one approach. Joe said, leave. Another, Matt. Bingo. Go to one of those things and don't put anything in your hand. Because when somebody looks at you and they see that you have something in your hand, they don't know what it is. When I used to go to things, I wouldn't have anything in my hand. And people go, you're not drinking? And I went, no. Bill. Great. We're obviously not going to get through everything that I have here. Let me just touch a couple of these other topics kind of quickly. What about your temperament and self-control at work? Is it okay to get angry at work? Well, let me ask this differently. Has there ever been a situation in work where you felt you should get angry? Well, let me ask it a little different. Has there ever been a day at work when you couldn't find something to get angry about? You know, there's a lot of things that go on at work that make you angry. Jerry.
Like Jesus said, be angry
with sin not. That's the exact verse that I was going to, that comes from Ephesians 4:26. Be angry and sin not. What is James, in James chapter 1, what does it tell us, how does it tell us to try and act? Swift, slow, slow. Swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. It's James 1:19. You know, if you need to, my dad always told me, God gave you one mouth and two ears for a reason. You know, he didn't give you two mouths and one ear, he gave you two ears and one mouth, so you should listen twice as much as you talk. So we really do need to listen. We need to be slow. When things come up that you don't like, you don't have to fly off the handle right away. Was there ever a time when Jesus got angry? With the money changers? What do we refer to that kind of anger as? Righteous indignation. Okay, there's a time and there's a place to be angry, and there's a method for doing it that you can do it without it being a sin.
I've often wondered what Jesus did when he hit his finger with a hammer.
Being a carpenter, I'm sure he probably did that. How about the kind of influence you can have by how you act in relation to being, should we be humble? Think for a minute from Luke 18. You know, there's a parable there about the Pharisee and the tax collector, and how they, when they went into the temple, how they conducted themselves. You know, the Pharisee was very, you know, chest pumped out, very prominent, and the tax collector was the guy who, you know, didn't raise his head and was very humble and reverent. Shouldn't we be humble people? Isn't that what God wants us to be? You know, no one wants to listen to somebody who's a braggart and a boaster. And
I don't want to be called a braggart here, but I have to talk about my granddad just a little bit. When he was out in the field driving the track, kind of humbleness, it goes a long ways. I remember him a lot of times when I wanted to do something wrong in my life.
Good example to have. Somebody else brought up earlier this little thing in your mouth called your tongue. Can that get you in any kind of trouble at work? All kinds of trouble. It isn't limited to just work. In James chapter 3, we have a whole chapter devoted to the tongue. And you know, it refers to the tongue as a fire, a world of iniquity. It's hard to control. You know, you have to consciously think about what you're saying and what you're doing. I'll tell you a funny story. When I worked out at Pratt Whitney, I worked in a planning group, and the man who ran the planning group had been there forever. He wasn't Mr. Pratt or Mr. Whitney, but I think he was like the next guy after that. Anyway, he was a very gruff guy, and he couldn't say a sentence without at least 2, 3, 4 curse words in it. And it was actually very creative how he could incorporate curse words into the sentence and still had some context to it so you can understand what he wanted if you could just filter out all the stuff. So one day I was in his office, and he was several levels above me. So it was, there were a couple managers in between me and him, but I was in his office, and he started talking to me, and it just started flowing, the curse words and the this and the that. And he wasn't mad at me. This is the way he talked. So right in the middle of it, I stopped him, and I said, you know, I don't want to use his name because Johnny probably knows who he is. I said, you know, could you do me a favor? I said, when we're together, could you just not use the curse words? And then I'm like, I'm waiting for the... From that point on until he left the company, when the two of us were together, he never cursed again in front of me. Although when we got the group together, he still did it. But you'd be surprised. I thought he was going to hammer me for saying it, but he respected it. So sometimes you'd be surprised what will happen when people do that and when you ask them not to do it.